You're listening to the Franchise Podcast Network, presented by Lucky Star Casino. KRXO FM and KRXO HD Oklahoma City, a product of Tyler Media, reaching over 1 million Oklahomans every week. Now, the Outdoor Hour, giving you the inside scoop on the great outdoors on 107.7 The Franchise.
As long as I can remember, I've been drawn to the outdoors. There's something primal in each of us that awakens when we step outside the bounds of modern society and back into the vast possibilities of the natural world. The more civilized our lives become, the louder our hearts cry for reconnection with our native ways. Failure is imminent, dangers drawing nigh, but approached with reverence and tact, the outdoors return wisdom and gain. In both the outdoors and in life, harvests are fleeting, but lessons and memories abound. With that in mind, we step forth boldly together in pursuit of ourselves outdoors. We are nothing more than tree stand troubadours. Welcome inside the Outdoor Hour. It's deer season in Oklahoma.
Let's go. Let's go.
Channeling a little Toby Rowland there. Live from Oklahoma.
Live from the tree stands.
It is deer season. In the prime time.
I would say let's go, but we went theoretically.
We did,
both
man.
Of us went.
We did. Man, I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here, man. It's been a while. Matt, good to see you back behind the glass.
We're
missing
well.
our regular menace here.
Where in the world is Joshua Wildman Stratton?
Man, he's in some good places lately.
Yeah, you told me about that.
He was in Alaska for a little over a week, I think. So this is cool. He's doing like a location scout. And I don't know that they hunted while they were there. I think it was really just kind of familiarizing themselves with the island that they're going to be on. But he's got a film project in the works up in Alaska chasing black-tailed deer. So he was there for like a week getting familiar. I'm sure they were scouting some animals and the land and all that. But he flew directly from Alaska to Hawaii, okay. Which that's a pretty polarizing trip.
That is, yes.
Imagine having to pack for both. Alaska
in the same
and
trip.
Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I think he's hog hunting in Hawaii. He may be doing a few other things. I think he'd mentioned trying to get on a spearfishing charter, but he'll be back in a few weeks, and we can talk to him about all of that.
So is he still with the Mule Deer Foundation? Okay.
Still with Mule Deer Foundation. They've got some projects going. Have you seen some of the film stuff that they've done while he's there?
Looked up a little bit, yeah.
They do really good stuff. He's got a production company that he works closely with and very talented people. They do good stuff. So anyways,
anyway,
Josh is not here.
Good for Josh. You and I both hit the trails yesterday looking for the legend in Oklahoma.
Did you find him?
I did not, but I do have a story from yesterday. Okay.
Who are you?
Oh, Dave Myrick, by the way.
We should, yeah.
Yeah, 107.7 The Franchise, call football games. Basically this. I don't know if that's me specific, but I'll take it.
It's good, though.
It is good.
Whole energy just changed as soon as the music dropped.
We got ambiance in the room, good music. I'm here for it.
You will always be Crash Davis to me.
I know. To a lot of people. Okay, so it's deer season yesterday, October 1st. We know this, right? I load up the truck with the bow, head down to our lease. It's southern Oklahoma. You've been there. I still
have a key.
You do have a key. I know. And you can keep it because you're Taylor Maples. I go to the southernmost tip of this thing and come in south to north. And there, when I get there, you know, go through the gate, lock it behind me, there is probably a football field of open grass about waist high. Then you've got your tree line that kind of starts our lease. So I drive through this field and get to the tree line and just pull into it because I wanted to park in the shade for the day. And I get out of the truck. I'm not being, like, ninja quiet. It's 11 o'clock. I figure most things are probably, you know, hidden until later the afternoon. So I get the bow out in my bag. And the whole while, I'm hearing what sounds like birds about 15 feet to the right of my truck.
When you say birds, what do you mean? Were you hearing, like, chirps?
It sounds like chirps.
Okay.
Like on the ground. Yep. Like they do, you know, in the woods. And didn't think much of it. Now, up to the right of my truck is coming from the north. That's an important side note here because the wind was out of the north. So I put everything down. I finally look over the hood, and there are at least 25 wild hogs within 15 yards of my truck, oblivious to the fact I'm there. So For those of you that don't know about hunting hogs, eyesight and hearing really has nothing to do. It's all about downwind. If you're downwind of a hog, a wild hog, you can literally sneak up, you know, within a couple feet. They're not going to know it. That's what happened. So I kind of lean on my truck and smile. Like, how many times have I been on hog stalks and taken people down, and we don't see any for months at a time? I'm not down to hunt hogs. I could care less if I see one. Here's 25. I can't grab the rifle because I don't want to blow my bow spot for the day. So it dawns on me, maybe I have a practice arrow in the truck, because everything I have on my bow has broadheads, G5s that are like $15 a piece. So I look to the truck. I do find one. Get it knocked. I've got time to walk around the hood and draw back. I put the first pin, you know, just behind the front left leg of the biggest sow. And let it go. And, you know, when you've bow hunted a while, you can tell by the thud, you pretty much struck home where you wanted to hit. And if you've never seen a bunch of wild hogs go nuts when they're scared, that's what happened. It's quite a sight. They run in circles and run into each other, and eventually they get single file and ran over a hill, and I took note in my mind what trail they took. And anyway, I walked to my stand. I wasn't feeling it. It was hot. The branch that's been there for years had died. The sun was just unleashing its hell on me. So I clambered down, went back to the truck to move spots, and decided to go track this hog. And sure enough, about 20 yards over the hill, there was a dry creek bank, and it had tumbled down, and there she was. So I don't know what the moral of the story is. I guess when hunting or outdoors, expect the unexpected. You never know. You might be so cold, all you want to do is get back to your truck and in the heater, or you're so hot, it's 0 hours, zero dark 30, you just want to give up, and that's when that 17 point will walk out in front of you. So just never give up, and expect the unexpected is the point I can make here.
If that was Allen Iverson, that would have been his practice arrow.
Yeah,
sorry, I couldn't resist.
I get it.
There is a good moral there. Always practice, kids.
Always practice.
Because you never know whenever your practice is going to turn into a trophy.
Yeah.
And have things beyond very expensive broadheads to shoot at a wild hog.
I always do try to keep. We've got coyotes, and we haven't had hogs on this property, but you never know when you might just need to waste one. It's definitely always good. We talked about this weekend, you and I, via text message, about our preparation for the season.
Mm-hmm.
I always shoot my broadheads in the foam. I've figured out over the years, I think, and maybe it's just that I don't have the best setup, and maybe I'm not as fine-tuned as I should be, but I have found that there is a little difference in how my field points shoot than my broadheads.
Sure.
And I don't want, even if it's a difference of 2 to 3 inches at 40, 45 yards, that's huge. A big enough, yes, difference for me, at least personally, to pay attention to.
Absolutely.
It. So what I will do is all summer I will shoot my field points, and I shoot regularly. I'm not somebody that gets out there every day and shoots 25 or 50 arrows, but I try to shoot at least once a week. Sometimes I don't get it done. And then as we start to approach fall, I'll ramp up the frequency that I'm out there, right? I don't believe in a ton of reps, because you're not going to shoot more than one arrow ideally in a hunting situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never going to be the guy that's out there just putting 50, 100 arrows down range. But, you know, the last couple of weeks in preparation, 3-4 days a week, I've been out there and I've shot, you know, 3 or 4 from 25, 3 or 4 from 30, 35, 40.
And you're shooting your broadheads when you're doing,
well,
this.
At that point, I'm still doing field points.
Okay.
But what I'll do is, like, so season opened yesterday on Tuesday, October 1st. So Sunday, I switched to my broadheads. And I go from, I have one of those bigger, you know, it's maybe 3 feet by 3 feet square.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name? Big Shot Targets,
Target,
I think it is, that I got from Okeeland Bow Hunters down in Norman. Shout out to Bryn and the guys down there. And so that's what I'll shoot my field points into. But like Sunday, before season opening Tuesday, I pull out just an old, beat up, cut up foam cube. It's like the high roller dice that are really popular today, but this thing's probably 15 years old. I couldn't tell you who made it.
Perfect.
And I'll throw one. You know, I've kind of got an idea because all my arrows shoot a little bit different. Again, just mere inches, right. But I've got one that I feel like I like this arrow, and maybe that's just the baseball player in me, right? Like, I feel like I've got one arrow that I like,
you
and
found
I'm
your
a
bat.
Little superstitious.
Yeah.
So I'll throw a broadhead on it, and I try not to do this, you know, more than five or six times, but I will actually shoot that broadhead into foam and fine-tune. So at this point, because of my distances, my sight pins are generally pretty locked in.
Sure.
But I'll actually move the entire sight housing up, down, left, right a little bit just to dial in that one arrow with that broadhead. And that's my gamer. And I'll do something like I always put it in the first slot in my quiver so I know where it's at.
Sure.
But I'll usually with a Sharpie like mark one of the fletchings.
So
or
you know.
I know this is the one. And that is the arrow that I will hunt with until I can't any longer. Whether it's, you know, I get a through and through and it rips a fletching off, or, you know, I had my gamer last year when I shot a buck, you know, it got snapped off because it got stuck in and he broke it with his leg while he was running. And so at that point, then I'll pick a new gamer and I'll readjust my sight. But I will actually pick one gamer arrow and I will dial it in. You know, again, limited number of shots. I don't want to be shooting it 10, 15, 20 times into foam because I do think that will eventually dull the blades. People think I'm crazy for doing this, though.
I don't. You referenced it. You don't want to shoot more than once at what you're aiming at in the woods. Multiple reasons. For one, if that deer gets up and runs off, having to track those down, especially hunting in the evening, that sucks after dark. There's nothing fun about that. So you want that shot to hit home where you're aiming. You and I do it a little different. I won't move the housing on my bow. What I will do, I've got a 10-foot stepladder, and I'll go up and down that and shoot like I'm at different levels of a stand or stands around my lease and kind of get the curvature of how the gravity affects that from the ladder that I'm shooting down into the same exact square target that you're talking about. And I'll move that around the yard and sometimes even put it, you know, up on a fence halfway. That is how I kind of adjust my sight with the three pins in lieu of movement, because I'm the same way with rifles, too. Once I get something mounted like glass, I hate jacking around and moving it. So once I have it where I want it, that is how I will kind of differentiate what it looks like from different angles up or down. But in my opinion, you cannot be too careful on that, because what we referenced, the bow I took, or the deer I took October before last, I was 40 yards away, and I knew from those practice rounds exactly what to expect when I let it go and where it was going to go. And it was a double lung heart. It took three steps and dropped dead, right? That's what you're aiming for. That's what you want. So anybody that tells me they practice too much, in my opinion, there's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what you're after. And if you go hunting, the goal is to get that thing dead before you have to jump down and track it. And so, no, I can't knock you for doing that. In fact, I kind of like the routine. Again, I'm not going to jack with my housing. that's just the way that I am. But, no, I like the practice rounds you're talking about.
Something else, just to play off of your comments about being prepared and you can't over-prepare. I was having a conversation in my group text last night with all the guys that are on this lease. And in past years, we've had two or three guys. This year, I think we've got five or six. So this is the biggest group we've ever had. There's a lot of excitement, a lot of community. But a lot of these guys that are out there with us have still not sat out there because they couldn't get out yesterday on opening day. So I sent pictures, and one of the guys says, "Whoa, where is that stand? I haven't ever seen." And I was like, "Here's the stand I'm in." And so we're kind of just still teaching these guys kind of the lay of the land. And one of the things I was explaining, I was thinking about later, and we're afforded some things in the state of Oklahoma that others aren't.
Hang on, before you get too far, are you guys a community lease? Like, you all use each other's stands?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's been kind of a point of challenge in the recent years. That's why it hasn't been a fit for some guys that have been on the lease in the past. Yes, there are places where one guy kind of has an affinity for this stand, or they've put more work into that, you know, tracking and trailing and wanting to try to harvest a deer out of this bedding area, whatever it might be. So there are areas that it's kind of like, if Jace wants to sit in that stand, I'm going to yield to him and let him. But we really try to find people for this lease that when we've got a good sense of there's going to be a deer here at this time, it's not, hey, I want to go sit in that. It's, hey, man, you should go sit there tonight. We know that deer's going to be there. You go sit there.
Trying to help out your felt,
100%. Gotcha. Yeah. So it's not perfect because human beings are messy, right?
Yeah.
But I think all in all, we've got a really good group. So anyways, I sat in the stand last night and somebody was like, I didn't know where that stand is. So I'm explaining, well, it's down on this part. It's a, you know, two man stand, blah, blah, blah. Anything that's coming in from the west is going to wind you depending on how the winds are playing, but there's not a lot of cover from the west. Anything coming from the east, there's a ton of cover from some cedars. And so we're kind of like illustrating this. And one of them asked me about, where I had laid my corn. And obviously that's something we can do in Oklahoma is hunt over corn and bait. One of my strategies that I've come to really like is as I walk in, I will use my rangefinder from the ground and I will actually basically paint yard lines at 25 and 20 yards from the stand.
Okay.
So I've got a frame of reference when I'm up in the stand, and I'll get up and confirm. And so for me, usually the way it works is it's like I'm in the stand. I know where the deer I expect to come in based on wind, based on how we know they track and trail. And at 20 yards from my stand, there's a line of corn. And it's like I know a deer standing eating that corn is 20 yards from
me.
5 yards back,
25.
Depending on where I'm at and what the environment allows, sometimes I'll do a 30 as well. But generally for me, it's corn at 20, corn at 25, and then I'll pick like a shrub or a tree or something at 30, 35, 40, and that's how my sight pins are set up. And then I do have, like last night from the stand, I knew that that tree was 45.
Right.
I don't have a 45 pin, but I know I'm good enough at geometry to recognize the difference between 5 yards on all these pins is this. If the buck of a lifetime was at 45, I could estimate it.
Sure.
And I would probably be comfortable taking that shot. But I like having that frame of reference.
I like that.
And it brought me to one other point. I've got one, the Okiehide blind that I've got set up out there is kind of like the Cadillac spot. Just because of the comfort that that hunting blind allows us. We've got a feeder set up there. We mow a little area. It's really nice. Last year, I thought, why not work smarter? And I actually went out during the summer, the last time that we mowed that area down, and I took wooden stakes from Home Depot, spray painted them bright orange, and I put them in the ground surrounding this feeder on either side. I basically got 20, 25, 30, 35, and I made my own little like gridded football field.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why?
Why not?
Why not?
I mean,
we can do it in Oklahoma. Why add one extra variable in? If you can bring a deer to you, why mess with guessing how far he is?
So I don't have any rebuttal to that. Part of me is like, the bait and wait strategy of hunting, I don't really dig.
I don't disagree.
But, look.
I didn't set the rules for the state, though.
Yeah, and we go through a lot of work in the off season that if you don't hunt, you're not aware of. I mean, a lease is a ton of work. You got protein feeders. You got corn eventually. So I can't hate that. The only caveat to that would be we're using bows. I won't take anything with a rifle. I just won't. There's something that is primal to me. If you're going to take something from nature, and I don't want to get on some soapbox here, but just me personally, I feel like doing it with my hands is how that should be. There are too many, you know, 3x18 scopes on a 6 Creedmoor that you can drop something at 700 yards. I'm not knocking anybody that does that. Just me personally, I dig, you know, having to be still, having to control your breath, having to control your movements. and blend into nature to get them to come that close to you to where you can use your hands to take it. To me, that is hunting. And so the bait and wait, it kind of goes against that. But again, I know that we put a lot of work into that. So yeah, I get it. And I do the same thing whenever I get to a new stand. The feeder is usually where the target is going to be around. So I will pull out my rangefinder and do it from the stand to the feeder that I've got in my mind exactly how far at least the feeder is. Then from that, yes, you can guesstimate your pins where they're walking to. But you've got a strategy, man, and it's kind of tough to argue with that. You don't want to make too much of a sure thing, I guess. But again, there's a lot of work that goes into it, so I can't knock you for it.
To your point, it's still archery.
It is.
So there's still a lot of gray area. There's a lot of room for error. There's a lot that can go wrong. I take very seriously the time, the energy, the money that I invest in doing this, the expense of my family, just in the hours that I'm out there in the field, the money that there's a huge opportunity cost for things we could do as a family with those funds.
Sure.
If I wasn't buying corn and all of this kind of stuff routinely.
And being on a lease is not cheap, by the way.
No.
At all.
Check out School Land. That's what we've done. Have you heard of the School Land auctions?
Yeah, I think so.
It's a 5-year lease through the state. There's more rules than this. I'm oversimplifying, but basically just don't build any permanent structures on it.
Right.
Relatively affordable compared to what some of these hunting leases are going for. But hey, we got more to talk about. We got to squeeze in a break. This is the Outdoor Hour. I am Taylor Maples. I just shot a bear. Yeah, you like that. Behind the glass is Maddie Goldfish.
Always baked and extra cheesy.
I love that goldfish.
We're missing Stratton this week, though.
He'll be back.
He will.
Hey, I'm here. Come on now.
We got Dave Myrick in the house. This is the Outdoor Hour. We'll be back after this with more on 107.7 The Franchise.
You're listening to The Outdoor Hour with your host Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back inside The Outdoor Hour. Taylor Maples, Dave Myrick, Maddie Goldfish. Man, deer season.
Let's go.
It feels good.
It does, man.
Here's an experience I didn't know that I was going to have this year. I don't know that I've ever swatted mosquitoes in a tree stand.
I got that text last night.
It was freaking hot out there, man.
It was hot, dude, yes. I hate that aspect about October in Oklahoma. As happy as we are, it's finally here, and you get all geared up. I mean, I wear snake boots because there are snakes down there.
Yep.
And, man, I lost pints yesterday. I mean, my legs are still cramping up today. But to your point, though, it's here. Some of my favorite days, I don't care if I see anything, dude. If I go out in the woods and I'm just up in the stand, I typically turn my phone off and just enjoy being out there. And there's always the what if, you know, the legend comes from underneath you that it keeps you kind of on edge. But again, I don't really care. It's just the point that we're finally able to go do it. It seems like that off season. I mean, my bow had cobwebs on it. I'm not as thorough as you about practicing, I guess, but kind of a funny story, though. When I get up in the stand yesterday, I looked on my first pin, and there was a little tiny spider on it, I guess from just being, like, in my office up on the shelf for so long. And I go to get it, and I, like, contort the bow to, like, look closer, and the bow just whacks me right in the right eye. And I was like, I was expecting blood to be dripping down. It was that. And it was just a cause to sit there in nature and laugh at myself, which is part of what I enjoy doing when I'm hunting. What can I tell you?
Yeah, I was swatting mosquitoes. I had a bunch of little, like, no-see-ums or gnats or something like that flying around. You get so focused in the moment on deer and just being, you know, in the environment and a part of the experience, but then there's little things like that just The mosquitoes, man, like it was enough to almost make me quit early.
Now, were you on the ground yesterday?
No, I was up in a stand.
Okay.
Yeah, I was up on a ladder stand, kind of a two-man, so I can spread out a little bit. They call them two-man stands. They're really not.
It's just a place to put, like, a bag down with some water and have some, like, walking around movement up there.
If that, yeah. I feel like it's more just I can go from one cheek to the other and try to keep my legs from falling asleep.
Right.
But, yeah, it was a nice sit. You sent me a picture while you were out there because I typically don't turn my phone off, especially days like yesterday. If I'm going to go for an afternoon sit, I'm sneaking out of work a little bit early.
Sure.
But I do work in a field that as long as I have my phone, I can be working. So I spent the first maybe hour and a half that I was sitting in the tree stand actively working. Okay. Lots of emails, text messages.
Did you hear that, bosses? He's covered.
But then, you know, about 5 o'clock, mae 5:15, my first doe started walking up. Did I send you that video?
I don't think so.
This was really cool. I had a doe. So I'm in a stand on the south end of our property. There's a little trail that runs east-west, and on the north side of this trail, we've got a little two-man stand that's up a tree with a cedar next to it, so it's got good cover. But this trail is kind of a highway for bucks.
Sure.
And I had a doe that came at me from my right, so from the west, and it was kind of a north-northeast wind yesterday. So this doe's walking up the trail and gets maybe 8 yards from me and winded me.
Did it?
I smelled, man. I was bad because I came from work, for starters. It was 90 degrees.
Yeah.
I was just out there sweating. I tried to dress light.
Did she blow at you?
She did not blow.
That's good.
She never found me. You know, she didn't do any, she didn't stomp, she didn't do any like the telltale signs that she knew I was there, but she was just moseying along this trail. And once she got like immediately downwind of me, 8 yards from me, she just stops and she kind of did like one of those quick little ducks of just, oh, I haven't been paying attention and maybe I need to, is kind of what I think her thought process was.
Something is off here.
Something's off here. Yeah. Her spidey sense starts tingling. and she kind of freezes, stands there for 2 or 3 minutes, circles back maybe 10 yards and cuts through some trees and freezes. And I'm not kidding. She probably stood there. I was actually amazed watching and mad all at the same time. She was staring right at the tree that I was in without moving. I mean, she didn't flick an ear for probably 30 minutes.
And the whole time you cannot
move. And I can't move either.
Yeah.
You know, my butt's falling asleep. My phone's vibrating in my pocket because I had just been doing a whole bunch of work stuff. And it's like, I am stuck here or else I'm probably going to blow the whole evening. Because if she does start blowing at me, I'm donezo. So anyway, she eventually got calmed down, got comfortable, cut through the trees, came and had some corn, and then wandered off. About the time she left, I had a doe with two fawns that came in from the opposite side, from my left. And remember, I'm a right-handed shot. So the way I'm set up on this trail with my corn down to my left, I'm set up that anything that comes from the east, from the north, from the south, I can take a shot at. Anything that comes from the west, I've got no chance, right? So I was playing the odds that they were going to come at me this way. The first deer didn't. Everything else I saw yesterday came in the way they were supposed to.
Right.
I had that one doe with a couple of fawns that came in, and they hung out for a couple hours. They were there almost till sunset. A couple more came in. One snuck in from the north. At one point, I looked down, and I had 8 does feeding on the corn. And I'm like, man, I just need to mix it up. I need some pheromone change. I need a little testosterone just to kind of mix it up and get the bucks coming.
You need the rut is what you need.
I do, and I know we're too early for that.
It's coming.
It's 90 degrees on October 1st. But you know what I mean? It's like sometimes I'm convinced that the big bucks use the little bucks as like sentries.
Scouts.
Yeah, they use them as scouts. Yep. And it's like if you can get a little button buck to come out, then next thing you know, you've got, you know, a fork horn.
Right.
The next thing you know, it's like, okay.
There we go.
There's there's a shooter out there.
Yeah.
And I know you've got a big property that you hunt. Yeah. Ours is a little bit more manageable. So we've got a pretty good sense between the size of the property and the number of cameras that we're running. We pretty much know what deer are where.
Sure.
We know what deer are running together, you know. So I know if I see these little bucks, I know which buck, the big buck, is probably out there.
That's crazy.
I know.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. And that's what I like about hunting in Oklahoma and the way that we get to do it. We were talking in the first segment about, I mean, there's obviously some things about hunting over corn and being able to use game cameras and ladder stands and all that that people that are from other states might turn their nose up at.
Frown at.
Yeah, 100%. Having grown up in one of those states out west in Colorado and being exclusive spot and stock and I really do have an appreciation for what we get to do in Oklahoma just because it's such a different style of hunting. And as a bow hunter, I love the intimacy that I have with the game that I get to pursue.
That's crazy. I mean, I kind of told you the way our lease is set up different than others in the state as far as you're on it for that trophy buck. You're on it for the fact that you have water that pretty much runs from the entire state of Oklahoma out of Texas, that during the rut you might get that 18 point that comes out of nowhere and you see it while you're on the lease. It's not really set up and run like you're talking about, that we know who's what and where. Now, I will say this to that. We've had a guy, Daniel Smith, Smitty from Duncan, that's been on it a couple years, wasn't really digging that aspect of it. I think he wanted to see more shooters, you know, and more consistent things to aim at. So over the last few months, I had an idea. We have city land to the north of our lease that is untouched, pristine, of course. And I thought, you know what, let's put a feeder next to that fence line and see if we can draw something off for Daniel. And so he got a feeder, and I helped him put it out. We filled it up with corn and put his camera there. And lo and behold, in the first few weeks, he saw shooters for the first time in a couple of years. And that's the spot I went to hunt yesterday after the hog incident and did not see anything. I came down after dark and walked, and he was sending me pictures that the bucks had come out. And I was like, okay, I'm kind of glad, because I don't want to take something that he hadn't killed anything with a bow at this point. So he goes back to work in New Mexico, works out of town full time, I think, tomorrow. So he goes down one more time this morning for a morning sit. And I wake up at 7 o'clock to just, you know, 800 texts that it happened.
He
got his 17 point from the spot I was sitting last night. And typically I'd be like, you got to be kidding me. But more than anything, I'm just happy, because that's a big deal to finally get your first bow kill, you know, especially being on a lease like ours for a couple of years that's not really designed to hold deer to certain spots. And so we kind of did it, and the plan worked, and then now he's getting it head and caped as we speak. And I'm very, very, very happy for the guy. Way to go, Daniel. Not spiteful at all, bro.
There is so much that can go wrong in the world of bow hunting. How cool is it when you come up with an idea
and it works,
and you think, there might be something here. Hey, let's go put a spot up here. Let's put a feeder. I bet we can pull something off of that property. And it all comes together, and it comes together early season.
Fast, yes. Now, I mean, so I don't know if you had this internal debate yesterday like I did. It's the first day. Do I really want to get what I'm after on day one and take away coming back out here, you know, till January 15th is when we can? So I don't know, man. I mean, last year I let a couple shooters walk because I was like, it's too early in the season. I don't want to take it yet. And I paid for it because I never saw anything better as the 15th rolled around. But I did have that thought yesterday, like, do I want to take a doe? Do I want to stock my freezer today? I mean, if you see the legend, you got to take it. But again, I was kind of thinking like, yeah, it would kind of suck to take it this early. But in his case, again, working out of state full time, could not have worked out better. More than happy for the guy. And yes, the plan that we came up with came to fruition, and he's reaping the benefits of that. He's got a kid in middle school that was just, you know how kids are, overwhelmed. You bring it home, I want to see it in the back of the truck, you know, and just coming home from school early to see that those kind of stories. I love hearing.
That's a great deer. That's a great story for him and his kid.
It is.
Yeah. And it is just very, very different. Ours is set up. We try to keep deer.
Right.
We try to keep them throughout the summer. We feed protein throughout the year to try to keep them around. What we'll do is we'll centralize it. We've got one feeder that we run year-round just to try to keep them there. I didn't this year, but in past years I have hung up like fly traps around that feeder during the summer, and it's an uphill battle. You know, it's like when you're a kid and you leave the door open, your parents say, you're trying to cool down the whole neighborhood. You know, putting fly traps out in nature in Oklahoma in the summer is awful. Yeah. But I'm just thinking anything we can do to try to give these deer a level of comfort and just get a sense of this is where I want to be. We also are known, we've had this property for 3 years now. The only deer we've killed are deer that I would not call our local deer.
Really?
Which is really unique. And part of that is we're really trying to grow what we've got. I wouldn't call us trophy hunters by nature. Some might, because I do want to take some does and I do want to fill freezers, both my own and friends and family. But I'm in a group of guys that are very selective on the bucks that they will harvest.
Let me ask you this. Do you get this question often? Or I guess it's more of a statement. That would be a good one next year. I don't know if there's a more annoying sentence in all of hunting than
that. Is there
that
a
guy.
More used sentence in hunting?
Boy, that's going to be a great one next year. Yeah, if he survives the Oklahoma Wild, if he's not hit by a car, if he doesn't get his antlers stuck crossing a creek and drown, which happens, there are all. If he doesn't get an illness and die. I mean,
yeah.
Just the people that act like it's just a given this thing is going to be back in the same spot next year just drive me nuts, man.
I know. And it is so hard to have an opinion on it, honestly, because we don't know. Yeah, if everything goes right and that deer survives another year and is standing in front of me at 20 yards quartering away, would I rather have him this year or next year?
Sure.
I'd rather have him 2 or 3 years from now. Yep. You know, let me have him as a 5.5-year-old instead of a 4.5-year-old. Yep. It doesn't work that way.
Not to mention the outfitters that are now moved in. There's so many things that can pick off a deer now.
How many times have you seen, and this is a rhetorical question, but, you know, the point is accurate, you pass on a deer and somebody else on your lease shoots him later in the year, or the neighbor takes him later in the year.
Hundreds.
It's ridiculous, yes. Right? And it is frustrating. I understand the sentiment of it. I don't get mad at it because I feel like that's all part of the game we play.
It is.
Right? I don't pass on shooters.
I don't know.
If it's early in the season, if it's late in the season, if it's, you know, if I get a chance at a deer that I am excited about, I am not going to feel bad about taking that shot.
No.
The only times I have passed on shooters is when I felt like I was forcing it. I passed on the biggest buck of my life last year because it was one, again, we know which deer we have and where they are, and there was one big bruiser that stayed on the southeast side of our property. And in the 2 years that we've been tracking this property with cameras, this deer has never shown up anywhere other than that area. We think he basically, between our property and the one to the south of us, would hang out, and he would just show up on our property in that southeast quadrant. I was hunting on the northwest quadrant, and right at last light, I could tell it was a big buck. I could tell it was a mature body. I couldn't tell which deer it was. And we had a couple out there that, again, we were trying to let go another year.
Mm-hmm.
And given the conditions, given the shot that I was presented, it was about 45 to maybe even 50 yards last light. I wasn't 100% sure which deer it was. A lot of people would have taken that chance and taken that shot. Good for them. I have no hard feelings for them. If I was in that situation again,
yeah,
I don't know that I would do the same thing I did. But in the moment, I said, I am not willing to force this. And part of the reason for that was it was Thursday night. My dad had just gotten to town, and he and I were going to hunt together Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Gotcha.
And I thought, last thing I want to do is force a shot on a deer that I don't really know is the deer I'm after. Wound an animal, have to go chase an animal,
right.
Spend, you know, be out till 2 a.m. trailing blood and tromp all of our scent through the woods and screw up the rest of the trip.
Did you end up taking a buck last year at all?
I did not last year.
And that's what we're talking about?
And that's what we're talking about, yeah.
Look, man, that's such a tough internal battle, you know, especially at the failing light. Do you want to take the shot that you're not quite sure you're going to hit where you're aiming at, and you're going to have to go track this thing through God knows what afterwards? I mean, look, I've done it. I've had seasons where I've thought, just like I did last year, I didn't take a buck either because I had shooters walk underneath me. I thought, you know what? I'll see better than that eventually. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen. So I guess if I would give one piece of advice to a hunter starting out, if you see a shooter and you're confident it's old enough, whether your group is going to give you grief about it or not, take it.
It's one of my least favorite things, man. And we joke about it all the time, right? Every time you send me a picture, I send you a picture, our first response is, man, he's going to be real good in a year or two. It's just become comedic. But there are so many guys out there that that's really their opinion. And that's great. Good for you. I hope that you get a chance to shoot bigger deer than me. There are guys that I am very close with that feel that way. I just am not wired that way.
Right.
As competitive as I can be, I feel like I have a different, and this doesn't make me better than, this is just, it makes me different than, and I'm not different than everyone. There's a lot of people that share this perspective, but I have so much reverence and respect for wildlife. I have so much reverence for each individual animal that I get to have an encounter with, whether I take that life or not.
Mm-hmm.
If I am not able to be excited about the harvest, it's not worth doing.
Agreed.
For me.
Agreed.
So if I'm in a position where I feel confident, I don't really go into a season knowing specifically which deer I'm looking at until I've seen them on the hoof.
Yeah.
You know, because looking at cameras and pictures is one thing,
it's
but
different.
You may have an encounter with a deer that makes it a shooter.
Right.
In some way that a week ago that wasn't even on your radar. And to me, it's more of the experience. It's more of, you know, what happens in the moment, how it all plays out and comes together that helps me make that decision. I've got a story for you.
Okay.
I saw some bucks last night.
Now, some bucks. Are we talking shooters? Are we talking,
I think I saw some mature deer.
Were they within range of your bow?
Yeah, 20 yards.
Well, what are we waiting on? What are we waiting on?
We got a commercial break. I'll tell you more after
Sounds
this.
Sounds good.
This is 107.7 The Franchise.
Now, back to the Outdoor Hour with your hosts, Taylor Maples and Josh Stratton on 107.7 The Franchise.
Welcome back in to the Outdoor Hour. Dave Myrick, Taylor Maples here on 107.7 Franchise. Taylor, do you have a story about last night? Because if you do, I want to hear it.
First off, you know how many times I've tried to get Josh to bring us back from commercial? And he's like, no, man, that's your deal. And I'm like,
dude,
it doesn't need to be my deal.
I'm just saying, we are back. Middell High School Spotlight Game of the Week here on 15. I'm too used to it.
There you go. I know. I love it. So I got to see some bucks last night, man.
Okay.
All in all, I think I saw 14 or 15 deer. It was a pretty active sit.
Active, yeah.
First one came in, that doe I was telling you about that winded me, I think 5:15, give or take. And I was covered up by deer from there until 8 o'clock when I finally climbed down. I had all the does. I think I said at one point I had like 8 that were with me. A couple had come and gone. And I was just hoping to mix up the pheromones and get some buck activity. And I did. I looked down and I had, they call them 11 points. Have you seen that? It's literally just a 1-1.
Spike?
Like the spike. They don't even have the forks. It's
okay.
Just 1-1 and we call it 11.
11 points. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah. I thought it was a doe and I'm like, no, there is an antler there.
Yeah.
Barely, but it counts. And I'm like, okay, so at least I got a little testosterone out here now. And again, next thing I know, I'm starting to hear some more activity coming from the north. So kind of behind me this way on my left side. The does kind of start to get nervous. They end up scattering. And sure enough, so shooting light last night was 7:41 where I hunt. We kind of anticipated the bucks would be moving late just because of how hot it was.
Yeah.
It was like 7:38 or 7:39. I think the last time I had looked at my clock was like 7:36, and this was a few minutes after that. all of a sudden I see antlers. They were good antlers.
You feel that little bump in your heartbeat?
I did a little bit. I did. I mean, it's opening day. I felt the bump in my heartbeat every time a doe stepped out, dude.
Yeah.
Just being out there. But it was absolutely – I'm kind of the opposite. I'll be honest. And I think this is from my background in sports.
Yeah.
I think my heart gets fluttering more when I just see deer in general. Like, oh, there's does coming over the hill. You know, there's deer coming in. It's like when a buck steps out for me – it's almost like I just clear the mechanism and
focus.
You know, it's a different type of, yes, I'm excited. And
yeah.
When I do release an arrow, you know, I get the shakes and all that stuff that you hope for. But
well, it's more, you're finally, it's go time.
It's go time.
It's why you're there and it's here in front of you. So, yes, everything else drops off between you and the buck.
I also have taught myself because we work so hard, like we've mentioned, in the off season and you put all of this into it. I've told myself so many times, like, there is time 10 minutes from now. There is time for the rest of my life to be excited and celebrate this. Now is not the time to get excited.
No.
Now is the time to be a good predator.
To take what I want.
Is what I tell myself. Anyways, so a buck walks out. Now, I am a big believer that the legal shooting light after daylight should be 25 minutes, not 30 minutes.
Okay.
I would not actually make an argument for that, but personally,
I get it.
I don't think that last 5 minutes is actually visible enough to take an ethical shot.
Agreed.
I have always felt that way. There's a lot of times that I will actually pack up 5 minutes early and just leave, get a little bit of help getting down the ladder stand and down the trail toward the truck. People may disagree with me because you're going to see a lot of deer in that final 5 minutes.
That's when the big boys come out.
When the big boys come out, and some days it comes together. Last night was not it, though. So I see antlers. I'm excited. Two more follow immediately. Good bodies. These were not young bucks, but it was dark enough that I could not tell which bucks they were.
Okay.
And like I said, we have a pretty good understanding of which bucks are running together. I knew that the buck that I was really in there after last night has been running with one other at this point in the year, not with a few others. I could easily tell which buck was the biggest of this group.
But like the hottest girl in the room, you don't go for. She set off air.
So I just wasn't quite confident. It was dark, but I am human. I did think about it. I did at one point. It was dark enough that I had enough cover that I held the bow up just to see if I was to draw back. Could I use my – yeah, I could still use my pins. I could still
– You got a pin on it?
I could – yep. I could still, you know, make the shot. But there was also something moving back behind me. And everything about me from our talk about the century deer, how they will use the younger bucks, I'm thinking – man, I bet that one behind me is the one.
The legend.
I bet that's the one. Had it not been a Tuesday night.
No, no.
Was it not going to be 85 degrees today? Had it not been opening day? You know, there's a lot of things that I could have done that would have convinced me to take a shot.
Isn't it amazing how many things, how many factors go through our heads in that 1 minute?
Mm-hmm.
From the time that we have built up in our mind of what it's going to be like when we find the shooter to the point you actually pull back and let that thing go. It is a lot more than people realize. If you don't hunt, how much is taken into account about the light? Will you have to track what night it is if you do have to track?
Is it a Monday night? Is it a Friday night?
Those are huge.
What do I have going on the next couple of days?
Yes.
I like to process my own game meat, so can I afford to take tomorrow off of work if I need to be out there, you know, working? It's crazy, man.
But you didn't pull back.
I didn't pull back. Didn't draw. I did hold the bow up, though, just to see if I wanted to, could I get a shot off right now that I'd be confident in?
Yeah.
The answer to that was yes. Could I tell enough about which deer I had in front of me to confidently take a shot? No. We just got a couple of minutes here. I got one question for you.
Okay. Shoot.
How do you get out of the stand in that moment?
What do you mean?
Shooting lights expired.
You got bucks around?
You got deer on you, bucks, does, whatever.
Yeah.
What's your strategy? Do you sit and wait till they leave? Do you?
Nope. I climb right down, business as usual, as confident as can be, and walk right through the middle of them if I have to.
Yeah.
Just make it seem like it is the most normal thing they have ever seen in their life.
Yeah.
And I've never had an issue with things coming back.
Do you use a light to get out?
No. I don't drive. I've got a Can-Am, a side-by-side. I don't drive that, and it is over 0.7 miles from where I park to where this stand is that I hunted. And I don't use the Can-Am to get there. I do believe in hiking into a spot from a good distance to not, you know, scent things up and make a noise. But when I come down, if there are bucks or doe, no, I just come down like it's just another day in the neighborhood for them.
I turned my spotlight on last night on my headlamp, and mainly because I wanted to see which deer it was.
Sure.
I was 100% like, let me get a quick look here. But I also think that just the shock of that light.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is wishful thinking, but I feel like they don't associate me as a human in that moment.
Could be.
Because
we don't know.
They can't see what's behind the light,
right,
for starters. And I'm pretty sure they're smart enough to know that a human doesn't naturally emanate light in that way.
And I've got one follow-up on the shooting light, the point that you made. As soon as I'm walking that 0.7 mile, I'm getting texts from Smitty, the guy that originally take the buck today, saying, you left too early. I got bucks on camera. I don't care. I couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And it was still legally shooting light, but I couldn't see, you know, from the stand of the feeder. So I'm out.
I think that's the right decision. There is some interpretation there on whether you should sit, even if you're not going to shoot, just to try to get the interaction with the deer, to get to see them, to keep their routine of coming all the way in. You know, you could have a whole conversation on that, but I'm with you, man. If I'm not confident in taking a shot, my sit is done.
Yeah, if I can't see, I can't see.
Yeah,
that's all. I mean, I'm not going to use a thermal or night vision,
right,
to hunt deer. A little illegal, but no. And again, the first day of the season, that of course plays into everything that we're talking about.
Yeah,
it might be wishful thinking to think in the next 3.5 months we're going to have that, you know, 20-point walkout, but that's why we go, man.
Yep, 100%. Hey, this has been fun. Thank you for joining me.
Anytime. Been a blast.
Shout out to JD Adams and Company, the Fly Shop at 122nd and North May Avenue in Oklahoma City. They've got everything you need to get outdoors and become a better angler. I will tell you, especially in the early deer season, last night I sat wearing some Howler Brothers fly fishing pants. They're green. They're perfect. They're very similar to the First Light pants that I will wear later in the year. But these things are so light in material. They're really, really comfortable on those hot early season sits. So a little crossover there for you. Go to the Fly Shop, JD Adams and Company, pick up their Howler Brothers long pants, and they're great for early season deer.
Can you unzip them and get like a flow through?
These don't have the unzip like I know First Light and a lot of the others do. But I didn't need that last night at all. They were
so
light enough.
Didn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm going to go check it out.
100%. So that's Dave Myrick. Behind the glass is Maddie Goldfish. I'm Taylor Maples. This is the Outdoor Hour. You can find it on social media at outdoor_hour. If you want to follow along with more content, you can find me at T_Maples. You're on Twitter.
Yeah, at Danny_BigMac13, all over franchise Twitter.
There you go. This has been the Outdoor Hour. Thanks for being with us. Have a great and safe deer season. Wear your harness.
Go get them, Oklahoma.
Go get them. You stay classy, Oklahoma. This has been the Outdoor Hour. We'll see you next time. Until then, go boldly. We'll see you outdoors.